heard reports that Miss Singer attempted to release Miss Thames during her caning, which in this reporter's eyes makes her an accessory to the treacherous activities in which Miss Thames was partaking by being unfaithful to our prince. With all of these reports, and with Miss Thames no longer in the top spot, one question remains. Who should be the new princess? A quick poll of readers has confirmed what we've suspected all along. We congratulate Miss Celeste Newsom and Miss Chris Ambers for their neck-and-neck places on the top of our public poll. Elise Wisks takes the third spot, with Natalie Luca not too far behind. In a wide gap between fourth and fifth places, America Singer comes, unsurprisingly, in last. I think I speak for all of Ilya when I encourage Prince Maxon to take his time finding us a good princess. We narrowly avoided disaster by Miss Thames exposing her true nature before a crown was placed on her head. Whoever you love, Prince Maxon, make sure she's worthy. We want to love her too. Chapter 13. I ran from the room. Of course Celeste wasn't doing me a favor. She was showing me my place. Why was I even bothering with this? The king was expecting me to fail, the public didn't want me, and I was sure I couldn't be a princess. I made my way upstairs quickly and quietly, trying not to draw attention to myself. There was no telling who that magazine's unnamed source was. "My lady," Anne said when I walked through the doorway. "I thought you'd be downstairs until lunch for sure. Could you leave me, please?" "I'm sorry?" I huffed, trying not to lose my patience. "I need to be alone, please?" Without a word, they curtsied and left me. I went to the piano. I would distract myself until I couldn't think about this anymore. I played a handful of songs that I knew by heart, but that was too easy. I needed to really focus. I stood up and dug through the bench for something more challenging. I burrowed past pages of sheet music until the edge of a book peeked out at me. Ilya's diary. I'd completely forgotten it was down here. This would be a great distraction. I carried the book over to the bed and opened it, taking in the ancient pages as they flipped through my hands. The diary opened to the page with the Halloween picture, the stiff photo acting as a natural bookmark, and I reread the entry. The children celebrated Halloween this year with a party. I suppose it's one way to forget what's going on around them, but to me it all feels frivolous. We're one of the few families remaining who has enough money to do something festive, but this child's play seems wasteful. I looked at the picture again, wondering about the girl in particular. How old was she? What was her job? Did she like being Gregory Ilya's daughter? Did it make her very popular? I turned the page and realized that it wasn't a new entry, but a continuation of the Halloween post. I guess I thought that after China invaded, we'd see the error of our ways. It's been obvious to me, particularly recently, just how lazy we've become. Really, it's no wonder China came in so easily, and it's no wonder it took so long for us to get in a position to fight back. We've lost that spirit that drove people across oceans and through devastating winters and civil war. We got lazy, and while we were sitting back, China took the reins. In the last few months in particular, I felt driven to give more than money to the war efforts. I want to lead. I have ideas, and perhaps since I've donated so generously, now is the time to offer them up. What we need is change. I can't help but wonder if I might be the only person who can provide it. I got chills. I couldn't help but compare Maxon to his predecessor. Gregory seemed inspired. He was trying to take something broken and make it whole. I wondered what he'd say about the monarchy if he was here today. When Aspen slid my door open that night, I was nearly bursting at the seams to tell him what I'd read. But I remembered that I'd already mentioned to my dad that the diary existed, and even that was going past what I'd sworn to do. "How have you been?" he asked, kneeling by my bed. "All right, I suppose. Celeste showed me this article today." I shook my head. "I'm not sure I want to get into it. I'm so tired of her."
"I guess with Marley gone, he won't be sending anyone home for a while, huh?"
I shrugged. I knew the public had been looking forward to an elimination,
and what happened with Marley was more dramatic than anything anyone expected.
Hey,
he said, risking a touch in the light of the wide-open door.
It's going to be all right.
I know. I just miss her, and I'm confused.
Confused about what?
Everything. What I'm doing here, who I am. I thought I knew. I don't even know how to explain it right. That seemed to be the problem lately. Every thought that passed through my head was sloppy. I couldn't line up anything.
You know who you are, Mare. Don't let them try to change you.
His voice was so sincere, and for a minute I did feel sure. Not because I had any answers, but because I had Aspen. If I ever lost sight of who I really was, I knew he'd be there to guide me back. Aspen, can I ask you something?
He nodded.
This is kind of strange, but if being the princess didn't mean I had to marry someone, if it was just a job someone could pick me for, do you think I could do it?
Aspen's green eyes grew wide for a second, taking in the enormity of that question. To his credit, I could see him considering the possibility. Sorry, Mare, I don't. You don't have it in you to be as calculating as they are.
There was an apology in his expression, but I wasn't offended that he thought I couldn't do it. I was a bit surprised at his reasoning, though.
Calculating?
How so?
He sighed. I'm everywhere, Mare. I hear things. There's a lot of turmoil down south, in the areas with a heavy concentration of lower castes. From what the older guards say, those people never particularly agreed with Gregory Ilya's methods, and there's been unrest down there for a long time. Rumor has it that was part of why the queen was so attractive to the king. She came from the south, and it appeased them for a while. Not so much anymore, it seems.
I thought about bringing up the diary, but I didn't.
That doesn't explain what you meant by calculating.
He hesitated.
I was in one of the offices the other day, before all the Halloween stuff. They were mentioning rebel sympathizers in the south. I was told to see these letters to the postal wing safely. It was over 300 letters, America. 300 families who were getting knocked down a caste for not reporting things or for helping someone the palace saw as a threat.
I sucked in a breath.
I know. Can you imagine? What if it was you, and all you knew how to do was play the piano? Suddenly you're supposed to know how to do clerical work, how to find these jobs even. It's a pretty clear message.
I nodded. Does Maxon know?
I think he has to. He's not that far off from running the country himself.
In my heart, I didn't want to believe that he'd agreed with this, but it seemed likely he was aware of what was going on. He was expected to fall in line. Could I do that?
Don't tell anyone, okay? A slip like that could cost me my job, Aspen warned.
Of course, it's already forgotten.
Aspen smiled at me. I miss being with you, away from all this. I miss our old problems.
I laughed. I know what you mean. Sneaking out of my window was so much better than sneaking around a palace.
And scrounging to find a penny for you was better than having nothing to give you at all.
He tapped on the glass jar by my bed, the one that used to hold hundreds of pennies that he'd given me for singing to him in the treehouse back home, payment that he thought I deserved.
I had no idea you'd saved them all until the day before you left.
Of course I did. When you were away, they were all I had to hold on to. Sometimes I used to pour them over my hand on the bed, just to scoop them up again. It was nice to have something you touched. Our eyes met, and everything else felt distant for the moment. It was comforting finding myself in that bubble again, the place that Aspen and I had created for ourselves years ago. What did you do with all of them? I had been so mad at him when I left, I'd given them back. All except for the one that stuck to the bottom of the jar. He smiled.
They're at home, waiting.
For what?
His eyes glittered. That I cannot say.
I sighed through my smile. Fine, keep your secrets, and don't worry about not giving me anything. I'm just happy you're here, that you and I can at least fix things, even if it's not what it used to be. but clearly for Aspen that wasn't enough. He reached down to the bottom of his sleeve and tore off one of his golden buttons.
I literally have nothing else to give you, but you can hold on to this, something I've touched, and think of me any time. And you can know that I'm thinking of you, too.
As silly as it seemed, I wanted to cry. It was unavoidable, the natural instinct to compare Aspen to Maxon. Even now, when thinking of choosing one or the other, felt like something very distant, I measured them side by side. It seemed very easy for Maxon to give me things, to resurrect a holiday for my sake, to make sure I had the best of everything, because he had the entire world at his disposal. Here Aspen was giving me precious stolen moments and the tiniest trinket to connect us to each other, and it felt like he'd given me so much more. I remembered suddenly that Aspen had always been this way. He sacrificed sleep for me. He risked getting caught out after curfew for me. He scrounged together pennies for me. Aspen's generosity was harder to see because it wasn't as grand as Maxon's, but the heart behind what he gave was so much bigger. I sniffed back the lingering urge to cry. I don't know how to do this right now. I feel like I don't know how to do anything. I haven't forgotten you, okay? It's still here. I put my hand to my chest, partly to show Aspen what I meant, and partly to soothe the strange longing there. He understood.
That's enough for me.
Chapter 14. I surreptitiously watched Maxon the next morning at breakfast. I wondered how much he knew about the people losing their castes in the South. Only once did he glance my way, but he didn't seem to be looking at me so much as at something near me. Anytime I felt uncomfortable, I'd reach down and touch Aspen's button, which I'd laced on a tiny ribbon and made into a bracelet. He would get me through my time here. Toward the end of the meal, the king stood, and we all turned to him.
As there are so few of you now, I thought it would be nice for us to have tea tomorrow night before the report. Since one of you will be our new daughter-in-law, the queen and I would like to make more opportunities to speak with you, learn your interests and such.
I felt a little nervous. Relating to the queen was one thing, but I wasn't sure how I felt about the king. While the other girls watched him eagerly, I sipped my juice.
Please come an hour before the report to the lounge on the first floor. If you're not familiar, don't worry. The doors will be open and there will be some music playing. You'll hear us before you see us,
he said with a chuckle. The others giggled lightly in return. Soon after, girls started making their way to the women's room. I sighed. Sometimes that room, huge as it was, made me feel claustrophobic. I usually tried to interact with people or use the time to read. This would be a Celeste day. I was going to park myself in front of the television and zone out. It was easier said than done. The girls seem particularly chatty today. I wonder what the king wants to know about us, Chris gabbed.
We just have to remember everything Sylvia taught us about poise, Elise commented.
I hope my maids have a good dress for tomorrow night. I don't want to have to go through what I did for Halloween. They're so scatterbrained sometimes. Celeste sounded put out.
I wish the king would grow a beard, Natalie said wistfully.
I peeked over my shoulder to see her stroking an imaginary beard on her own chin.
I think he'd look good.
Yes, I can see that, Chris said graciously before moving on. I shook my head and tried to focus on the ridiculous show in front of me. But no matter how I tried, I couldn't tune out the words of the other girls. By lunch, I was a ball of nerves. What would he want to say to me, the girl from the lowest caste left in the competition? What would he want to discuss with the girl he expected so little from? King Clarkson was right. I heard the floating melody from the piano long before I found the lounge. The musician was good. Better than me, that was for sure. I hesitated before walking in. I decided to pause before I spoke, really think about my words. I realized I wanted to prove him wrong. I wanted to prove that reporter wrong, too. Even if I lost, I didn't want to go home a loser. I was surprised by how much this suddenly meant to me. I stepped through the doorway, and the first thing I saw was Maxon,
standing along the back wall of the room, talking to Gavril Fide. Gavril was sipping wine as opposed to tea, and he'd suddenly lost Maxon's attention. I saw Maxon's eyes rake over me, and I could have sworn his lips made the shape of a wow. I turned my head and blushed, walking away. I took the risk of glancing at him again, and saw that he was watching me move. It was hard to think rationally when he looked at me that way. King Clarkson was talking to Natalie in one corner, and Queen Amberlee was with Celeste in another. Elise was sipping her tea, and Chris was walking around the room. I watched as she passed Maxon and Gavril, giving Gavril a warm smile. She said something, which they both chuckled at and kept walking, peering over her shoulder at Maxon as she did so. After that, she made her way to me. "You're late," she jokingly scolded. I was feeling a little nervous. "Oh, it's nothing to worry about. It was actually kind of fun." "You're already done?" If the king was finished speaking with at least two girls, I'd have less time to compose myself than I thought. "Yes, sit with me. We can have some tea while you wait." Chris pulled me over to a table, and a maid approached us immediately, setting tea, milk, and sugar in front of us. "What did he ask you?" I pressed. "Actually, it was very conversational. I don't think he's trying to get any information exactly, more like he's trying to get a feeling for our personalities. I made him laugh once," she gushed. "It went really well, and you're naturally funny, so if you just talk like you would to anyone else, you'll be fine." I nodded before picking up my tea. She made it sound all right. Maybe the king had to compartmentalize himself. When it came to dealing with threats to the country, he had to be decisive, cold. He had to act quickly and deliberately. This was just tea with a bunch of girls. There was no need for him to be that way with us. The queen had moved away from Celeste and was now speaking softly to Natalie. The look on Natalie's face was adoring. For a while I'd been irritated by her dreamy disposition, but she was simple, and it was refreshing. I sipped my tea again. King Clarkson drifted over to Celeste, and she gave him a seductive smile. It was a little disturbing. Where were her boundaries? Chris leaned over to touch my dress. "That fabric is amazing. With your hair, you look like a sunset." "Thank you," I said, blinking my eyes. The light had caught on her necklace, an explosion of silver on her throat, and it blinded me for a moment. "My maids are very talented." "Absolutely. I like mine, but if I become princess, I'm stealing yours." She laughed, maybe meaning her words as a joke, maybe not. Either way, something about my maids hemming her clothes bothered me. I forced a smile, though.
"What's so funny?"
Maxon asked, walking over. "Just girl talk," Chris said flirtatiously. She was really on tonight. "I was trying to calm America. She's nervous about speaking to your father." "Thank you for that, Chris."
"You don't have a thing to worry about. Be natural. You already look fantastic."
Maxon gave me an easy smile. He was clearly trying to open up our lines of communication again. "That's what I said," Chris exclaimed. They shared a quick look, and there was this feeling of them being on a team. It was strange.
"Well, I'll leave you to your girl talk. Goodbye for now."
Maxon gave us both a short bow and went over to join his mother. Chris sighed and watched Maxon go. "He's really something." She gave me a quick smile and went to talk to Gavril. I watched the elaborate dance of the room, couples coming together to speak, separating to find new partners. I was even happy to have Elise join me in my corner, though she didn't say much.
"Oh, ladies, the time has gotten away from us," the king called. "We need to make our way downstairs."
I looked up at the clock and he was right. We had about 10 minutes to get down to the set and prepare ourselves. It didn't seem to matter how I felt about being a princess, or how I felt about Maxon, or how I felt about anything. The king clearly thought I was so unlikely a candidate that he didn't even want to bother speaking with me. I was excluded, perhaps on purpose, and no one even noticed. I held it together through the report. I even made it through dismissing my maids. But once I was alone, I broke down. I wasn't sure how I'd explain myself when Maxon came knocking, but that ended up not mattering. He never showed, and I couldn't help but wonder whose company he was enjoying instead. Chapter 15. My maids were gifts. They didn't ask about the puffy eyes or the tear-stained pillows. They merely helped me pull myself together. I allowed myself to be pampered, grateful for the attention. They were wonderful to me. Would they be this nice to Chris if she managed to win and took them away? I watched them as I debated, and I was surprised to notice a tension among them. Mary seemed mostly fine, maybe a little worried, but Anne and Lucy looked like they were deliberately avoiding eye contact with each other and not speaking unless they absolutely had to. I couldn't begin to guess what was happening, and I didn't know if it was my place to ask. They never intruded on my sadness or anger. I supposed it was only right that I do the same for them. I tried not to let the silence bother me as they did my hair and dressed me for a long day in the women's room. I ached to put on one of the luxurious pants that Maxon had given me for Saturday use, but this seemed like a bad time for that. If I was heading down, I wanted to be a lady about it. Points to me for effort. As I settled in for another day of tea and books, the others chatted about the night before. Well, all of them except for Celeste, who had more gossip magazines waiting to be read. I wondered if the one in her hands had anything about me. I was debating trying to take it when Sylvia came in with a thick pile of paper in her arms. Great. More work.
"Good morning, ladies," Sylvia crooned. "I know you usually wait for guests on Saturdays, but today the Queen and I have a special assignment for you."
"Yes," the Queen said, walking over to us. "I know this is short notice, but we have visitors coming next week. They will be touring the country and stopping by the palace to meet all of you."
"As you know, the Queen is usually in charge of receiving such important guests. You all saw how she graciously hosted our friends from Swendway."
Sylvia gestured over to Queen Amberley, who smiled demurely.
"However, the visitors we have coming from the German Federation and Italy are even more important than the Swendish royal family, and we thought this visit would be an excellent exercise for you all, especially since we've been so focused on diplomacy lately. You will work in teams to prepare a reception for your respective guests, including a meal, entertainment, and gifts," Sylvia explained.
I gulped as she continued.
"It is very important for us to maintain the relationships we have, as well as to forge new ones with other countries. We have outlines of proper etiquette for interacting with these guests, as well as guides for what's typically frowned on when hosting events for them. However, the actual execution is in your hands."
"We wanted to make it as fair as possible," the Queen said. "I think we've done a good job of putting you all on the same field. Celeste, Natalie, and Elise, you will be organizing one reception. Chris and America, you will take care of the other. And since you have one less person, you will have one more day. Our visitors from the German Federation will be coming on Wednesday, and we'll be receiving guests from Italy on Thursday."
There was a short moment of silence as we took that in.
"You mean we have 4 days?" Celeste screeched. "Yes," Sylvia said. "But a queen has to do this work alone, and sometimes on far less notice."
The panic was palpable.
"Can we have our papers, please?" Chris said, holding out her hand.
Instinctively, I put mine out as well. Within seconds, we were devouring the pages.
"This is going to be tough," Chris said, "even with the extra day."
"Don't worry," I assured her. "We're going to win." She laughed nervously.
"How can you be so sure?"
"Because," I said decisively, "there's no way I'm letting Celeste do better than me." It took 2 hours to read through the packet and one more to digest everything it said. There were so many different things to consider, so many details to plan. Sylvia claimed she would be at our disposal, but I had a feeling asking for help would make her think we couldn't do a good enough job on our own, so that was out. The setup was going to be challenging. We weren't allowed to use red flowers because they were associated with secrecy. We weren't allowed to use yellow flowers because they were associated with jealousy. And we weren't allowed to use purple anything
because that color was associated with bad luck. The wine, food, everything had to be opulent. Luxury wasn't seen as showing off. It was meant to make a statement about the palace. If it wasn't good enough, our guests might leave unimpressed and completely unwilling to meet with us again. On top of all that, the regular things we were supposed to have learned, speaking clearly, proper table manners, and the like, had to be adapted to a culture of which neither Chris nor I had any knowledge, besides what was printed in our packets. It was incredibly intimidating. Chris and I spent the day taking notes and brainstorming, while the others did the same thing at a nearby table. As the afternoon wore on, our group started complaining back and forth about who had the worst situation, and after a while it was actually kind of funny. "You two at least get another day to work," Elise said. "But Ilya and the German Federation are already allies. The Italians might hate everything we do," Chris worried. "Do you think we're supposed to wear dark colors for ours?" Celeste complained. "It's going to be a very rigid event." "We probably don't want it to be floppy anyway," Natalie said, doing a little shimmy. She laughed at her own joke, and I smiled before moving on. "Well, ours is supposed to be super festive, and you all have to wear your best jewelry," I instructed. "You need to make a great first impression, and appearances are very important." "Thank goodness I'll get to look good at one of these stupid things," Celeste sighed, shaking her head. In the end, it was clear we were all struggling. After everything that had happened with Marley, and then being somewhat dismissed by the king, I felt strangely comforted to know we were miserable together. But it would be a lie to say that paranoia didn't take over before the end of the day. I was convinced that one of the other girls, Celeste in particular, might try to sabotage our reception. "How loyal are your maids?" I asked Chris at dinner. "Very, why?" "I wonder whether we should store some things in our rooms instead of in the parlor. You know, so the other girls don't try to take our ideas." It was only a tiny lie. She nodded. "That's a good idea, especially since we go second and it would look like we copied them." "Exactly. You're so smart, America. It's no wonder Maxon liked you so much." And she went back to eating. I didn't miss her casual use of the past tense. Maybe while I'd been worrying about being good enough to be a princess and feeling completely unsure I wanted to be one at the same time, Maxim was forgetting all about me. I convinced myself that she was just trying to make herself feel more confident about her standing with Maxon. Besides, it had only been a few days since Marley was caned. How much could she possibly know? The piercing scream of a siren jerked me from my sleep. The sound was so foreign, I couldn't even begin to process what it was. All I knew was that my heart was pounding in my chest from the sudden rush of adrenaline. Before a second had passed, the door to my room flew open and a guard ran in. "Damn it, damn it, damn it," he repeated. "Huh?" I said groggily as he raced over to me. "Get up, Mare," he urged, and I did as he said. "Where are your damn shoes?" Shoes. So I was going somewhere. Only then did the sound make sense to me. Maxon had told me once before that there was an alarm for when the rebels came, but it had been thoroughly dismantled in a recent attack. It finally must have been repaired. "Here," I said, finding and slipping my feet into them. "I need my robe." I pointed to the end of the bed, and Aspen grabbed it, trying to open it for me. "Don't bother, I'll carry it."
"You need to hurry," he said. "I don't know how close they are."
I nodded, heading for the door, Aspen's hand on my back. Before I hit the hallway, he jerked me toward him. I found myself in a deep, rough kiss. Aspen's hand was behind my head, holding my lips to his for one long moment. Then, as if he forgot the danger, his other hand pulled my waist to his, and the kiss deepened. It had been a long time since he'd kissed me this way. Between my fickle heart and the fear of being caught, there was no reason to. But I could feel an urgency tonight. Something might go wrong, and this could be our last kiss. He wanted to make it count. We stepped apart, barely taking a second to look at each other one more time. He put his hand around my arm and pushed me out the door.
"Go, now!"
I dashed for the secret passage hidden at the end of the hall. Before I pushed the wall, I looked behind me and caught sight of Aspen's back as he ran around the corner. There was nothing I could do but run myself, so I did. As quickly as I could manage, I made my way down the steep, dark stairs to the safe room reserved for the royal family. Maxon had told me once that there were two kinds of rebels, northern and southern. The northern ones were pesky, but the southern ones were deadly. I hoped whatever I was running from was more interested in disturbing us than in killing. As I descended the stairs, the cold set in. I wanted to throw on my robe, but worried I might trip. I felt steadier as the light of the safe room came into view. I leaped from the last step, and I could see a figure standing out among the shapes of the guards. Maxon. Though it was late, he was still in his suit pants and his shirt, slightly rumpled but presentable. "Am I the last?" I asked, pulling on my robe as I approached.
"No," he answered. "Chris is still out there. So is Elise."
I looked behind me at the darkened corridor that seemed to go on forever. In either direction, I could make out the skeletons of three or four stairways stemming from their secret origins in the palace above. They were empty. If anything Maxon had told me was true, his feelings for Chris and Elise were limited. But there was no mistaking the concern for them in his eyes. He rubbed his temple and craned his neck, as if that would really help in the dark. We looked past each other, watching the stairs as guards milled around the door, clearly anxious to close it. Suddenly, he sighed and put his hands on his hips. Then, with no warning at all, he embraced me. I couldn't help but clutch him to my chest.
"I know you're still probably upset, and that's fine, but I'm happy you're safe."
Maxon hadn't touched me since Halloween. It hadn't even been a week, but for some reason it felt like an eternity. Maybe because so much had happened that night, and even more had happened since. "I'm glad you're safe, too." He held me tighter. Suddenly, he gasped.
"Elise!"
I turned to see her thin figure coming down the stairs. Where was Chris?
"We should go inside," Maxon gently urged. "Sylvia is waiting."
"We'll talk soon." He gave me a small, hopeful smile and nodded. I headed into the room with Elise following right behind. As she walked in, I saw she was crying. I put an arm around her shoulder, and she did the same to me, happy to have the company. "Where were you?" I asked. "I think my maid is sick. She was a little slow to help me, and then I was so frightened by the alarm I got confused for a moment and couldn't remember where to go. I pushed on four different walls before I found the right one." Elise shook her head at her forgetfulness. "Don't worry," I said, hugging her. "You're safe now." She nodded her head to herself, trying to slow her breathing. Of the five of us, she was easily the most delicate. As we went deeper, I saw the king and queen sitting close together, both of them in robes and slippers. The king had a small stack of papers on his lap, as if he was going to use the time down here to work. The queen had a maid massaging one of her hands, and they both wore serious expressions.
"What, no company this time?"
Sylvia joked, drawing our attention to her. "They weren't with me," I said, suddenly worried about the safety of my maids. She smiled gently.
"I'm sure they're fine. This way."
We followed her to a row of cots set up against an uneven wall. The last time I was in this place, it was clear that the people who maintained the room weren't prepared for the chaos of all the selected girls down here. They'd made progress since then, but it wasn't completely up to date. There were six beds. Celeste was curled up in the one closest to the king and queen, though we were still quite a ways from them. Natalie had settled in next to her and was braiding thin pieces of her own hair.
"I expect you to sleep. You all have a serious week ahead of you, and I can't have you planning if you're deliriously tired."
Sylvia went away, probably to look for Chris. Elise and I both sighed. I couldn't believe they were going to make us go through with the whole reception thing. Wasn't this stressful enough? We let go of each other and made our way to neighboring cots. Elise was quick to tuck herself into the blankets, obviously worn out. "Elise," I said quietly. She peeked up at me. "If you need anything, let me know, okay?" She smiled. Thank you. Sure thing. She rolled back over, and it looked like she was asleep within seconds. I knew it was true when she didn't turn over at the bustle of noise coming from the door. I glanced back and saw Maxon carrying Chris into the safe room, with Sylvia close by. Immediately after she was through, the door was sealed shut. I tripped, she explained to Sylvia, who was fretting over her. I don't think I broke my ankle, but it really hurts.
There are bandages in the back. We can at least wrap it,
Maxon instructed. Sylvia walked away quickly, passing us as she went hunting for bandages.
Sleep, now, she ordered.
I sighed, and I wasn't the only one. Natalie took it in stride, but Celeste seemed very irritated. I checked myself then. If my behavior was anything like hers, it needed to change. Though I didn't want to, I crawled into my cot and faced the wall. I tried not to think about Aspen fighting upstairs, or my maids maybe not making it to their hiding place fast enough. I tried not to worry about the upcoming week, or the possibility of the rebels being southern and trying to slaughter people above us as we rested. But I did think about all of that, and it was so exhausting, I eventually found sleep on my cold, hard cot. I didn't know what time it was when I woke up, but it must have been hours since we'd come to the safe room. I rolled over, looking at Elise. She was sleeping peacefully. The king was reading his papers, whipping them through his hands so quickly he appeared to be mad at them. The queen's head rested on the back of her chair. She looked even more beautiful when she slept. Natalie was still asleep, or at least she looked that way. But Celeste was awake, propped up on one arm and looking across the room. Her eyes held a fire that she usually reserved for me. I followed her gaze over to the opposite wall, where she was watching Chris and Maxon. They sat side by side, his arm wrapped around her shoulder. Chris had her legs curled to her chest, looking as if she was trying to keep warm, even though she was wearing a robe. Her left ankle was wrapped in gauze and didn't appear to be bothering her at the moment. They spoke quietly with smiles on their faces. I didn't want to watch, so I rolled back over. By the time Sylvia tapped me on my shoulder to wake me, Maxon was already gone. So was Chris. Chapter 16. As I emerged from the stairwell that had ushered me to safety the night before, it was all too apparent that the Southerners had been here. In the short hallway that led to my room, there was a pile of debris that I had to climb over to get to my door. Typically, the worst of the mess was gone by the time we were released from the safe room. This time, however, it looked like there had been too much for the staff to get to, and we would have been down there all day. Still, I wished they'd tried a little harder. I spied a group of maids working to scrub away giant letters on a far wall. "We are coming." The line was repeated down the hall, sometimes written in mud, other times in paint, and one appeared to be done in blood. Chills ran through me, and I wondered what that meant. As I stood there, my maids dashed up to me. "Miss, are you all right?" Anne asked. I was startled by their sudden appearance. "Yes, fine." I looked back to the words on the wall. "Come away, miss, we'll get you ready," Mary insisted. I followed obediently, slightly stunned from everything I saw and too confused to do anything else. They worked deliberately, the way they did when they tried to soothe me with the routine of getting dressed. Something about their steady hands, even Lucy's, was calming. By the time I was ready, a maid came to escort me outside, where we would apparently be working this morning. The smashed glass and chilling graffiti were easy to forget about in the Angelus sun. Even Maxon and the king were standing at a table with advisors, reviewing piles of documents and making decisions. Under a tent, the queen read over papers, pointing out details to a nearby maid. Near her, Elise, Celeste, and Natalie sat at a table, discussing plans for their reception. They were so engrossed it looked like they'd completely forgotten the rough night. Chris and I sat on the opposite side of the lawn, under a similar tent, but our work was going slowly. I was having a hard time talking to her, as I fought to get the image of her sharing a moment with Maxon out of my head. I watched as she underlined sections in the paper Sylvia gave us and scribbled notes in the margin.
I think I might have figured out how to do our flowers, she commented without looking up.
Oh, good.
I let my eyes wander over to Maxon. He was trying to look busier than he was. Anyone really watching could see how the king pretended not to hear his comments. I didn't understand that. If the king was worried about Maxon being a good leader, the thing to do was to truly instruct him, not keep him from doing anything, because he worried his son would make a mistake. Maxon shuffled some papers and looked up. He caught my eye and waved. As I went to raise my hand, I saw Chris enthusiastically wave back from the corner of my eye. I focused on the papers again, fighting a blush.
Isn't he handsome? Chris asked.
Sure. I keep imagining how children would look with his hair and my eyes.
How's your ankle?
Oh, she said with a sigh. It hurts a little, but Dr. Ashler says I'll be fine by the reception.
That's good, I said, finally looking up at her.
Wouldn't want you hobbling around when the Italians come.
I was trying to sound friendly, but I could tell she was questioning my tone. She opened her mouth to speak, but then quickly looked away. I followed her gaze and saw that Maxon was heading over to the refreshment table the butlers had set up for us.
I'll be right back, she said quickly, and limped toward Maxon faster than I would have thought possible.
I couldn't help but watch. Celeste had walked over too, and they were all talking quietly as they poured water or grabbed finger sandwiches. Celeste said something, and Maxon laughed. It looked like Chris was smiling, but she was clearly too bothered by Celeste interrupting her time to be genuinely amused. I was almost grateful for Celeste at that moment. She might have been 100 things that irritated me, but she was also impossible to intimidate. I could use some of that. The king bellowed something to one of his advisors, and my head snapped in his direction. I missed exactly what he'd said, but he sounded irritated. Over his shoulder, I caught a glimpse of Aspen, walking his rounds. He looked my way briefly, risking a fast wink. I knew that was meant to ease my worries, and it did a little. Still, I couldn't help but wonder what he went through last night that led to the slight limp in his step and the bandaged gash by his eye. As I was debating whether there was a way to inconspicuously ask him to come see me tonight, a call rang out from just inside the palace doors.
"Rebels!" a guard yelled. "Run!"
"What?"
another guard called back, confused.
"Rebels! Inside the palace! They're coming!"
The guard's words made the threat on the walls this morning flash through my mind. We're coming. Things started moving very quickly. The maids ushered the queen toward the far side of the palace, some pulling her hands to make her move faster, while others dutifully raced behind her, blocking her from an attack. Celeste's red dress blazed as she followed the queen, rightly assuming that was probably the safest way to go. Maxon scooped up Chris and her injured foot, turning to place her in the arms of the nearest guard, who happened to be Aspen.
"Run!" he screamed at Aspen. "Run!"
Aspen, faithful to a fault, bolted, carrying Chris like she weighed nothing at all.
"Maxon, no!" she cried over Aspen's shoulder.
I heard a loud pop from inside the open doors to the palace and screamed. As several of the guards reached under their dark uniforms and pulled out guns, I understood what that sound was. Two more pops came, and I found myself frozen, watching the flurry of bodies move around me. The guards pushed people to the sides of the palace, urging them to move out of the way, as a swarm of people in rugged pants and sturdy jackets raced outside, running with backpacks or satchels packed to the brim. Another shot came. Finally realizing that I needed to move, I turned and ran without thinking. With the rebels flooding out of the palace, the logical thing to do seemed to be to run away from them. But that put me heading toward the great forest with a pack of vicious people chasing me. I ran and slipped a few times in the flats I was wearing, and I considered taking them off. In the end, I decided slippery shoes were better than none.
"America!" Maxon called.
"No, come back!"
I risked peeking back and saw the king grabbing Maxon by the neck of his suit jacket,
pulling him away. I could see the terror in Maxon's eyes as he stared after me. Another shot was fired.
"Stand down!" Maxon shrieked. "You'll hit her! Cease fire!"
There were some more shots, and Maxon continued to scream his orders until I was too far away to make them out. I ran through the open field and realized then that I was alone in this. Maxon was being held back by his father, and Aspen was doing his duty. Any guard coming for me would be behind the rebels. All I could do was run for my life. Fear made me fast, and I was surprised by how well I avoided the undergrowth once I hit the woods. The ground was dry, parched from months with no rain, and it was solid. I vaguely felt my legs getting scratched, but I didn't slow down to see how bad it was. I was sweating and my dress was sticking to my chest as I moved. It was cooler in the woods and steadily getting darker, but I was hot. At home, I sometimes ran for fun, to play with Jared, or just to feel the ache of exertion. But I'd been sitting in the palace for months, eating real food for the first time, and I could feel it now. My lungs burned and my legs were throbbing. Still, I ran. After I got far enough in the woods, I looked over my shoulder to check how close the rebels were. I couldn't hear them with the blood pounding in my ears, and when I checked, I couldn't see them either. I decided this was my best chance to hide before they caught sight of the bright dress in the dim woods. I didn't stop until I saw a tree that looked wide enough to conceal me. Once I was behind it, I noticed that there was a branch low enough to grab and climb too. I took off my shoes, tossing them away, hoping they wouldn't lead the rebels right to me. I climbed, though not very high, and turned my back to the tree, making myself as small as I could. I focused hard on slowing my breath, fearing the sound would give me away. But even after that, for a moment it was quiet. I figured I'd lost them. I didn't move, waiting to be sure. Seconds later, I heard a loud rustling.
"We should have come at night,"
someone, a girl, huffed. I flattened myself against the tree, praying nothing would snap.
"They wouldn't have been outside at night," a man replied.
They were still running or trying to, and it sounded like they were having a rough go of it.
"Let me carry some," he offered.
It sounded like they were getting very close.
"I can do it."
I held my breath and watched as they passed right under my tree. Just when I thought it might be safe, the girl's bag ripped, and a pile of books fell to the forest floor. What was she doing with so many books?
"Damn it,"
she cursed, getting down on her knees. She was wearing a denim jacket, with some kind of flower embroidered on it over and over again. She had to be burning in that.
"Told you to let me help."
"Shut up."
The girl pushed at the boy's legs. In that playful gesture, I could see how much affection there was between them. In the distance, someone whistled.
"Is that Jeremy?" she asked.
"Sounds like him."
He bent and picked up a few books.
"Go get him. I'll be right behind you."
He looked unsure but agreed, kissing her forehead before jogging off. The girl gathered the rest of her books, using a knife to cut the strap off her bag and bind them together. I felt a sense of relief as she rose, assuming she would start moving. But she flipped her hair back out of her face, raising her eyes to the sky. And she saw me. No amount of quiet or stillness would help me now. If I screamed, would the guards come? Or were the rest of the rebels too close for that to matter? We stared at each other. I waited for her to call the others, hoping that whatever they had planned for me wasn't too painful. But she didn't make a sound, except to let out a single, quiet laugh, amused at our situation. Another whistle sounded, slightly different from the last, and we both glanced in the direction it came from before looking at each other again. And then, in the least expected of all possible gestures, she swung one leg behind the other, lowering herself in a graceful curtsy. I looked on, completely stunned. She rose, smiling, and ran off toward the whistle. I watched her back as 100 tiny sewn flowers disappeared into the brush. When it felt like more than an hour had passed, I decided I could get down.
I stood at the foot of the tree, realizing I didn't know where my shoes were. I walked around the base of the trunk, trying to locate the little white slippers to no avail. Giving up, I decided I should make my way back to the palace. Looking around, it became clear that that wasn't going to happen. I was lost. Chapter 17. I sat at the base of the tree, legs folded up to my chest, waiting. Mom always said that was what we were supposed to do when we were lost. It gave me time to think about what had happened. How was it possible that rebels had gotten into the palace 2 days in a row? 2 days in a row? Had things gotten so much worse on the outside since the selection had begun? Based on what I'd seen back in Carolina and had experienced at the palace, this was unprecedented. My legs had a bunch of scratches on them, and now that I wasn't hiding, I could finally feel the sting. There was also a small bruise halfway up my thigh that I wasn't sure how I'd acquired. I was thirsty, and as I settled down, I felt worn out from the emotional, mental, and physical strain of the day. I let my head rest against the tree, closing my eyes. I didn't intend to fall asleep, but I did. Sometime later, I heard the distinct sound of footsteps. My eyes flashed open, and the forest was darker than I remembered. How long had I been asleep? My first instinct was to climb back up the tree, and I ran around to the other side, stepping on the torn remnants of the rebel girl's bag. But then I heard people calling my name.
"Lady America," someone said. "Where are you?" "Lady America?" another voice called.
Then, after a while, in a loud voice, a command came.
"Be sure to look everywhere. If they've killed her, they might have hung her or tried to bury her. Pay attention."
"Yes, sir,"
men chorused back. I peeked around the tree, focusing on the sound. I squinted, trying to make out the figures moving through the shadows, unsure they could really be here to save me. But one guard, his slight limp not slowing him down at all, made me finally sure that I was safe. A small patch of fading sunlight fell across Aspen's face, and I ran.
"I'm here," I yelled. "I'm over here."
I ran straight into Aspen's arms, for once not caring about who saw.
"Thank goodness," he breathed into my hair.
Then turning toward the others,
"I've got her. She's alive."
Aspen bent down and picked me up, cradling me.
"I was terrified we were going to find your body somewhere. Are you hurt?"
"My legs a little." A second later, several guards were surrounding us, congratulating Aspen on a job well done.
"Lady America," the one in charge said, "are you injured at all?"
I shook my head. "Just some scratches on my legs."
"Did they try to hurt you?"
"No, they never caught up to me."
He looked a bit shocked. "None of the other girls could have outrun them, I don't think."
I smiled, finally at ease. "None of the other girls is a five." Several of the guards chuckled, Aspen included.
"Good point. Let's get you back."
He went in front of us and called out to the other guards.
"Be on the lookout. They could still be lingering in the area."
As we moved, Aspen talked to me quietly.
"I know you're fast and smart, but I was terrified."
"I lied to the officer," I whispered.
"What do you mean?"
"They did catch up with me eventually." Aspen looked at me in horror. "They didn't do anything, but this one girl saw me. She curtsied and ran off."
"Curtsied?"
I was surprised, too. She didn't look angry or threatening at all. In fact, she just looked like a normal girl. I thought over Maxon's comparison of the two rebel groups and knew this girl must be a northerner. There was absolutely no aggression in her, only a drive to do her task. And there was no doubt that the attack last night was from the southern rebels. Did that mean something? That the attacks weren't only back-to-back, but by different groups? Were the northerners watching us, waiting for us to be this drained? Thinking about them spying on the palace so intently was a little frightening. At the same time, the attack was almost funny. Did they simply walk in the front doors?
How many hours were they in the palace collecting their treasures?
Which reminded me.
She had books. Lots of them, I said.
Aspen nodded.
That seems to happen a lot. No clue what they're doing with them. My guess is kindling. I think it's cold where they stay.
I replied, not really answering. If I needed kindling, I could think of much easier places to get it than the palace. And the way the girl was so desperate to gather up the books made me sure it was something more than that. It took nearly an hour of slow, steady trekking to get back to the palace. Even though he was injured, Aspen never let his hold on me slip. In fact, he looked to be enjoying the walk despite the extra labor. I liked it too.
The next few days might be busy for me, but I'll try to come see you soon, Aspen whispered as we crossed the wide, grassy lawn leading up to the palace.
Okay, I answered quietly. He smiled a little as he looked forward, and I joined him, taking in the view. The palace was glittering in the evening sun, with windows lit up on every story. I'd never seen it like this. It was beautiful. For some reason, I thought Maxon would be there waiting by the back doors for me. He wasn't. No one was. Aspen was instructed to take me to the hospital wing so Dr. Ashler could tend to my legs, while another guard went off to tell the royal family I'd been found alive. My homecoming was a non-event. I was alone in a hospital bed with bandaged legs. And that was how I stayed until I fell asleep. I heard someone sneeze. I opened my eyes, confused for a second, before remembering where I was. I blinked, looking around the room.
I didn't mean to wake you, Maxon said in hushed tones. You should go back to sleep.
He was propped up in a chair by my bed, so close he could rest his head by my elbow if he wanted to. What time is it? I rubbed my eyes.
Almost 2.
In the morning? Maxon nodded. He watched me carefully, and I was suddenly very worried about how I looked. I had washed my face and pulled my hair up when I came back, but I was pretty sure I had a pillow imprinted on my cheek. Don't you ever sleep? I asked.
I do. I'm just on edge a lot.
Occupational hazard? I sat up a bit more. He gave me a thin smile.
Something like that.
There was a long pause as we sat there, unsure of what to say next. I thought of something today when I was in the woods, I said casually. He smiled a bit more at how easily I brushed off the incident.
Oh, really?
It was about you. He inched closer, his brown eyes focused on mine.
Do tell.
Well, I started. I was thinking about how you were last night when Elise and Chris weren't in the hall, how worried you were. And then today I saw you try to run after me when the rebels came.
I tried. I'm so sorry.
He shook his head, ashamed that he hadn't done more. I'm not upset, I explained. That's the thing. When I was out there alone, I thought about how worried you probably were, how worried you are about the others. And I can't pretend to know how you feel about all of us, but I know that you and I aren't exactly a highlight right now. He chuckled.
We've seen better days.
But you still ran after me. You handed Chris off to a guard because she couldn't run. You're trying to keep us all safe. So why would you ever hurt one of us? He sat silently, not sure where I was going. I understand now. If you're that concerned with our safety, you couldn't have wanted to do that to Marley. I'm sure you would have stopped it if you could. He sighed.
In a heartbeat.
I know. Tentatively, Maxon reached across the bed for my hand. I let him take it.
Do you remember how I said I had something I wanted to show you?
Yes.
Don't forget, okay? It's coming. This position requires a lot of things, and they aren't always pleasant. But sometimes you can do great things.
I didn't understand what he meant, but I nodded.
I suppose it will have to wait until you're done with this project, though. You're a bit behind.
Ugh. I pulled my hand from Maxon's to cover my eyes. I'd completely forgotten about the reception. I looked back at him.
Are they still going to make us do that? There have been 2 rebel attacks, and I spent the majority of my day lost in the woods. We're going to mess it up.
Maxon's face was sympathetic.
You'll have to push through.
I let my head flop back on the pillow,